I'll call Dave Hamilton and say, look, I need this problem. And he'll say, I don't know how to do it.
What got you guys even like lit to want to even attempt it or do it?
Oh, there's no way you can do that. Wrong.
It's a lot bigger than I probably should have built.
No one else has this trouble. I don't know what's going on.
Exactly.
This is fun. Don't screw yourself up by taking on too much.
You're listening to The Crossing Gate, the official podcast of the Twin Cities Division of the National Model Railroad Association. The topics and discussions are about the world's greatest hobby, model railroading. Here are your hosts, Thomas Gazier and Ken Zeska. This episode of The Crossing Gate is brought to you by The Gazebo. Does your layout have 6 square inches of space not occupied by SnapTrack? Probably not, but if you did, you could add The Gazebo. Yes, the famous piece of architecture that is loved worldwide by model railroaders in all scales. If you have a small town, a medium town, or even a large city, it still needs a gazebo. This wonderful design of sophistication allows you and your loved ones to be inside and outside at the same time. You can pick from a variety of colors. You can have it in white. You can have it in blue. You can have it in white. You could add a band and host concerts in the park. Get some music playing under your layout to add some atmosphere and fun. You could have an oompa band. You could have a banjo band. You could even have a bluegrass band. If you like that sort of thing. So get yourself a gazebo today and don't forget to pick one up for the modular display layout. Heck, get one for every module and be the talk of the next train show, The Gazebo. Gazebo is a product of Tropes Incorporated, subsidiary of Gruesome Casket LLC. Oompa Band sold separately.
All right, welcome to another episode of the Crossing Gate podcast. I'm your host, Tom Gazier, and I am joined today with Joe Binnish.
Good evening.
William Sampson.
Hello, everybody.
Mike Jordan.
Hello.
Larry Eggerine.
Hey, guys.
Ken Zeska.
Good evening, guys.
And David Hamilton.
Howdy.
And we're going to discuss having better bench time, tools, methods, and motivations. What do you do at the bench? What gets you to the bench? What keeps you there? And maybe what keeps you away from it? But we'll discuss some of our favorite tools and tell you where to get them. We'll start out with Joe. He has quite the workbench for building all his resin cars. So why don't you tell us what do you do at your workbench that stands out, Joe?
Boy, nothing like putting me on the spot. Done both model airplanes and model trains, and so I really like the Tamiya tools, and those kind of get me to the bench. I just picked up a panel line scriber recently, and they're available on Amazon or at your local hobby shop. I've been using that. And not only does it work good for rescribing panel lines if you need to, but it's a good scriber when you need to break a piece of plastic off. And a new tool is fun. It gets you down there.
Can you describe what that is? What is a panel line scriber?
It's kind of a hook blade so that you're dragging the back of a broken off X-Acto blade across the plastic. And it takes a little curl of plastic off of it, real shallow. But it's enough to break the tension on the surface. So if you put that on a sharp edge and bend it down, it will snap on that line.
Is that good for scoring styrene if you had like a straight edge on it?
Absolutely. It's perfect for that.
Better than a knife blade. Okay. William, we'll go to you, Mr. Sampson. What do you like and enjoy about your bench time?
I think just as far as my setup, even just to kind of give you guys an idea of what I work with, I have a roller cabinet, and it has the center of the roller cabinet has a pullout, basically a bench. So that bench, if it gets pulled out and locked into place, I can't really get in and out of my railroad room all that well. So the roller cabinet itself is nice just for the fact that I have all my tools and I have my chalks and materials that I use in it. But it also encourages me to always clean it. And I always start with a blank slate. So I'm going to start with a new project that, shelf gets pushed in, all the stuff gets put away. And I think the toolbox itself is just the starting place for anybody's workbench themselves and trying to keep it clean. And it's a little unorthodox in terms of a tool, but the actual toolbox is what is my workbench, and I stand at it. So since I'm standing there and I do have a stool that I can pull in every now and again, having that ability to get it clean as fast as possible, that's always something that I kind of strive for. Because that keeps my mind clean and it lets the project itself start with everything clean. And I know that I'm going to put one of you guys on the spot because you said that your workbench isn't clean. Ken, you're the guy I got to look to here. As far as projects are concerned and sorting, you said that you had a lot of projects on your workbench. Do you find it cumbersome, or is that something that, you know, when you go to hit the reset button, how do you dive into a project and what tools do you use when you do so?
William, you're exactly right. That's exactly my problem. I have too many things on there, and I need to solve that. So one of the things that I've done is I went to the local Target store and bought a bunch of 1-quart clear plastic containers. And so I've got one that has got all my adhesives in it, one that has my sharps in it. You know, I've got little boxes with sharps in it. I put all my decals in one thing, and if I start a project, and it's going to sit for a while, I'll put it in one of those boxes and put it away. And every once in a while, and tonight just happens to be one of those times, when I have about 6 projects out, it actually discourages me from going and sitting down and doing anything because it's such a mess. I've looked at your tool, that tool, rolling tool cart that you have, and I think that's just such a great idea. But you also have a much stronger level of discipline than I do, so I don't. So now, Dave Hamilton, you're doing scratch building, and I know I've come over to your place, and you've always accomplishing terrific projects. How do you do that?
I feel like I have to do it in order to stay in the club. So now I'm lucky because I have 2 desks for one thing, so it's easy for me to, you know, if I'm doing programming or I need a bigger surface, I can just turn around and use the second desk. The other one is smaller, but it's got, I don't know, 7 drawers in it. So about every other year, I make an attempt to go through the drawers and actually make sure that the right things are in the right drawers. And then I go up and work on the kitchen table and so much for the desks. I've actually done that quite a bit. The light's better in the kitchen, you know, with natural light. And it's a nice big surface. It's warmer than the basement most of the time. So I take a box lid like from a Xerox box or copy paper box, and I put whatever I'm going to use in there, and I scurry up to the kitchen table. And as long as I'm not painting anything, I can get away with it. We were on a vacation trip a couple years ago, and we were in an antique store, and somebody had a really big, what do they call them, self-healing cutting mats. And this one was like, I don't know, 30 inches by 38 inches or 40 inches. So I gave the guy $5 and brought it home. So I put that on the kitchen table, and I have a great work surface to work on. So I haven't spilled any glue on anything so far. And like I said, I don't do any painting up there. A little elbow room, good light, and a warm space to work. And I guess the warm thing is really just during the January, February time of the year around here, because our basement's always 10 degrees cooler than the upstairs part of the house for some reason. Got to be comfortable. But project motivation-wise, I'm not getting any younger, so I just have to keep on trucking and keep trying to get stuff done, I guess. What about you, Mike?
Well, tools, you know, everybody's got little specialty tools, but for me, buy a pack of those different size jeweler files, and I go into like Hobby Lobby or any of those art craft store and walk around, and I buy tools that people who make jewelry, I look at their small tools, and those become handy little nippers and pointy pliers and that kind of stuff. So there isn't any specialty tool that I like. It's just finding these smaller tools to work on smaller objects. We joke about putting our projects in blue tubs, but if you look at my workbench, it's mostly Athern blue box containers, and those have my different projects in them. So depending on my mood, it depends on which Athern box gets pulled out, dumped in the middle of the workbench, and I just make sure I have a good task light, and I've got a radio I turn on, and I just kind of zone out on my project.
Hey, fellas, I have a question. Mike, you talk about whatever your mood is as far as getting a project going. I find that if I'm not interested or excited about a project, I do really bad work, and it's just, it's kind of negative productivity. Is that something you guys deal with?
I think that's why I've got these blue Athern boxes. If it's getting to a difficult part or I need a break, I put it in the box and slide it off to the side and find another project. My railroad is, every hour I spend on my railroad is an hour that I didn't watch television. So it's just, yeah. You know, yeah. It's that motivator of, holy crap, I don't want to watch Vanna White again.
Yeah.
So I go in the basement, find something to work on.
The housewife. So Larry, I know I call you a professional, but you go around and restore other people's layouts. What does your workbench look like, knowing you have to travel with it at certain points?
I actually have two complete, almost identical sets of tools. Now, the bench, I do have specialized dental picks, is the things I really love using for scribing, etc. They just work great, or just cleaning. You know, if you're stripping paint and you got that one spot that it won't come out, you can get a little dental pick in there and just kind of pop the paint out. My bench and my portable toolbox, I drive a small SUV, and I have a two-piece toolbox. The bottom half is the roll-around, and the top half is just a standard carry toolbox. I carry a lot of extra stuff, you know, like I have three-foot levels, one in the car, one and two in the shop, just in case I leave one somewhere. So I have a lot of duplication because of that. The big thing I have that's identical in both is a good multimeter I bought off of Amazon. It's got a 2-inch display, and it's not backlit, but it's black lit. So the background is black and the letters are white. So even without minimum light, like working under a layout, you can still see that thing pretty well. And it also is available to be blacklit. You know, those are the little things. You know, when you're underneath a layout, seeing is sometimes the hardest part. So big light, good meter.
You talked about this layer. I like it because you actually have a reason for buying two of everything. I don't know what the rest of us will come up with an excuse for, but usually we lost it. That's always that syndrome where you go buy something and then you go back and put it right next to the one you already have.
Right, exactly. Yeah, I've done that as well.
So I got a couple of questions here. One was, Joe brought this up about the new project. And I'm going to go to William because you talked about this in one of your videos on YouTube. And I call it the shiny object syndrome, where you get something and it's shiny, which means all the old ones are, you know, how do we avoid that, or how do we deal with that? Why do you work on that, William?
Well, I mean, I think I was trying to direct Ken to his compartment storage that he alluded to. And then Mike also mentioned it. I do it as well with the box lids. It's a simple way to be able to shelf something, set it aside, and then come back to it. But what do you do after you've shelved 40 of those things? And now you're sitting there going, which one do I pick? And yeah. I think for myself, what it really comes down to, it really becomes the incentive of fellow modelers. Because like right now, I just put in push buttons on the fascia of my railroad to throw the turnouts. And it seemed like a little project that had been sitting there. But when it came down to it, having the right tools, in this application, I just needed, an actual boring bit to put into the fascia because I wanted a nice clean cut. But having organization. So what I do a lot of time is just put everything away, get it all organized. Like Ken said, put it in bins, or Mike alluded to, and then come back to them and dump them out. But I think from an organization standpoint, one of the biggest things ends up still being, at least for myself, is to be able to kind of categorize priority and say, when you have guys over, what do you want to try to do if you're going to try to operate? Well, you want to have it clean. You want your workbench clean. You want stuff picked up so it looks presentable. But I think those storage compartments, I mean, that's one of my high things on the list that I've always had as far as, organization is concerned. But to actually spin one over towards Joe, you go do a lot of detailing. And when you're doing a lot of detailing, what is your method, whether it's going to be
bending brass, cutting material, going through the process of maybe organization. Do you have anything on your workbench for a lot of those, you know, minute detail parts, whether it's brake rigging and all that stuff?
No, I usually lose too when I am bending something.
Or it's stuck to your sock.
Yeah, exactly. So I get really good at it because I have to make four for everyone I make. No, it's I've discovered that my workbench surface is glossy black plexiglass and then another piece of plexiglass on top of that. So a white paper towel for most pieces that I'm working on, I'll fold it up, you know, more or less square and then put stuff on there as I complete it. But a lot of times I'll do one at a time kind of thing. So I'll bend something up and then stick it on wherever it needs to live. But, you know, I should be more organized, but I just, you know, I don't want to waste any time getting more organized. Does that make sense?
Well, do you guys, any of you, I mean, I know I use blue shop rags. I just use shop rags and I lay out a roll right on front of me if I'm working on something, like you said, a white paper towel, to try to find stuff. Is there any sort of, you know, organization system that anybody uses, or what, magnets? Sometimes there's little magnets where you can get some of the steel grabs they'll stick to and they'll hold them at least in place while you have them.
Like Mike Jordan says, they go into the future. You find them later.
That's the eventual find.
Exactly.
I think everybody has that in their shop vac, most of their detail parts. But William, so you said, you know, you get incentive from other modelers, and I think the rest of us would call that shaming, but we'll just, we'll leave it at incentive. Back to like the, how do you avoid the clutter? One of the things I do is, I try to do, is three projects only at a time. You know, I can do three things. I can't do four or five, whatever. So if I do three things, that limits my workbench of and my focus and with my helps with my ADHD or whatever at the time. Do you guys set a limit on how many projects that you've done? Larry, do you do that? I know you got to work outside your own layout, but do you say, I only want to work on these. When I finish them, I'm going to move on.
Yeah, that's exactly how I do it. If I come to a stopping point where I need a part or something like that, I use Dollar Tree shoe boxes, the plastic ones, the clear ones, and I write down, I have a little job sheet. And I think that's the big thing, because that little job sheet, I'll stick it in, it's on a 4x5 card, and it'll say what I'm waiting for. That way I don't have to remember 2 weeks from now where I was. I know where I was, and if, you know, you can keep the sheet until it's done. In the business aspect, it also keeps me organized with billing and all that, too.
Do you put all the parts in there? Because I love that system. I bought the acrylic clear shoe boxes, and I'll put the engines in there and the shells and the decoder I bought for it, the speakers, all the detail parts. So when I get to that, I can just pull it out of my workbench and ta-da, pour in the glue and it's done. But okay, I like that one. I like that acrylic shoe box, too.
I also bought at the flea market some small Ziploc bags. And I mean, they're 2 inches by 1 inch. You know, they're real small. But like for the couplers and all the little screws that'll go all over the bottom of the shoebox, they go into those little plastic bags. And that way I can readily pull them out.
Okay, so now I wanted to talk to Dave, because Dave, you mentioned the kitchen table. Having to bring things from downstairs up to the kitchen table, knowing you have to clear off the table and go back down, does that help you limit and focus what you're working on at that time?
Oh, for sure. Because it's, you know, especially like this past winter when I was, you know, starting to do the car scratch building, you know, it was perfect. Because I had one lid for, you know, when I first started cutting the plastic. And then when the cars started going together, you know, I had two of these Xerox box lids. You know, actually, I think I might even have a third one, because all the tools, you know, I have a drawer liner, I guess, that you put knives and forks and stuff in, you know, so I snatched one of those up from someplace, and I've got, you know, the knives and tweezers and stuff lined up in there. And then I have the actual parts in one of these other Xerox box lids. And I know Xerox box, Piper Cub, whatever you want to, you know, terms you want to use, it's a box lid. It makes it real easy to get it off the table and put it on the floor, like against the counter, because I don't take everything back in the basement. You know, if I'm working upstairs, I just try to, you know, keep it neat, like in the corner in the kitchen. and put it back on the table when I'm working, you know, and by keeping a box lid for this car and a box lid for that car and then one box lid for the tools, it's a good size kitchen table. So I don't have any trouble spreading the stuff out and picking what I need and then neatly putting it away at the end of the day. So I try not to lose too many things. And so far I've been pretty lucky, but you know, like Larry said about these Ziploc bags, I started using sandwich bags. Since I don't go to work anymore and put a sandwich in a bag, I've got a lot of sandwich bags. And they really come in handy for keeping stuff compartmentalized for different projects, whether it's screws or axle, you know, wheel sets or whatever, you know, and they're relatively inexpensive.
Well, the Ziploc bag is a good idea in general, though, Dave. The little ones that you can get, a lot of times when you order something from overseas, they send you a lot of little parts in them. That's a great way to order.
Oh, yeah. And I've got a few of those that I've saved and I'm reusing. I almost like the sandwich bags better because it's easier to get my hand in them to get the parts out. Sometimes with those little bags, you start shaking them out, you know, and too many things can come out.
Zip and it flips off and on the floor.
Yeah. So, you know, but I do use them. So, but not as many as I use, as opposed to the sandwich bags. I use more sandwich bags.
Sure.
So
that's cool. That's a cool tip. There's a lot of things to store out there. Mike, what do you use for storing a project or parts and pieces besides the lid of an Athern box like the rest of us?
Just like they were talking, putting the smaller parts in the sandwich bags, I'll find a small, like a yogurt container or a small lid, something that I can put my small screws and pins in just because it's visible and I can get to them. And then that goes into the blue box with my project. But I like Larry's idea of writing a note, and sticking it in the box. I've had to stop on some projects because I needed something. And then when I'm going to the hobby store, I can, instead of digging through the box and trying to remember, I can just pull the post-it note off and off to the store I go. You know, those are things I've done without thinking about it. But now that with all this conversation, now I can figure out that it's organized. And if it's a really good idea, then I'll just tell everybody it was mine.
so we can steal twice again. There we go.
Yeah.
So if you were going to recommend a couple of tools to someone, and Larry, I'll start with you if you think about this. What would you say, even because I know you use a lot of electronics, so what is a really good meter for model rarity for checking your track, your DCC, anything like that? What would you recommend?
I bought as I was alluding to earlier, it's got a 2-inch display, which helps even if it's on the bench, you can set it in the back and still see it. And the key search for, I bought it off Amazon. It was like $22. The key phrase would be TRMS, Tango Romeo Mike Sierra 6000. And it has an EBTN display, Echo Bravo Tango November. Okay, and that is a black display with white letters. And it can be backlit. The white letters can be backlit. But they honestly, if you have any light at all, you don't need to. And it's also a true RMS meter. So when you measure DCC track voltage, it'll read around 7. Don't worry about that. Just take a good meter reading on a track you know works. And that gives you your reference to see if you're losing something. But it has a lot of really good features. You'll find it when you search for that phrase. That meter is the biggest thing for finding all the weird stuff. But my favorite tool I bought is made by Klein, K-L-E-I-N. And it's a 4057 wire stripper. It's from 22 gauge to 30 gauge. So when you've got those 30 gauge wires on your decoders, if you're like me, you use your thumbnail to strip them about 80% of the time. Those strippers work so good, and they're Kleins. They're never going to go bad.
So what gauges do they go from? What do you go
from? They sell multiple sizes. They have one that goes from 14 to 24.
That's the red-handed one?
The most is 22 to 30.
Yes.
And that, what'd you say, William, the red-handled one?
Yeah, it's the red-handled one.
Mine's blue.
Oh, blue. Yeah.
But they have a red handle. They have multiple handles.
Yes.
So, yeah.
What was the number of that, Larry?
4057. You should find that on Amazon also. Or I think it's Lowe's that sells Klein. If not, it's Home Depot. One of the
Home
two.
Depot does for sure.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
Lowe's might as well.
Yeah, because this has been my wire stripper for years.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, then I've got the same one. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. 38 wire, you're
showing our thumbnails, guys.
Yeah.
Caveman, get your wife down there, honey. I know.
Or you can use your teeth, you know.
But, if you still have them, if you still have real teeth, yeah.
Or good C-bond. But those Kleins are real nice, and they're the difference between Klein and everybody else, you can find 22 to 30 gauge strippers anywhere. The thing I like about Kleins is the ergonomic fit of your hand. Yep. They just fit well in your hand, and I mean, it makes the job simple. Yeah.
So we have a new source for advertising.
Yes. Yes. The Crossing Gate loves the fine wire strippers ad. Made by Klein.
We'll run at them tomorrow.
Yeah. Yeah, right after the podcast. So, William, what are some go-to tools you use?
I think one of the biggest things, it's not a tool I'm using on my actual project, and it is actually related probably more to the podcast. I use a Bluetooth speaker. I've got it out all the time. And the one I use that's readily available is a Sony speaker, and it's about the size of your fist. It puts out good audio. It's great for audio for podcasts or just talking. But I also bop around. I listen to music when I'm, you know, working in the layout room. But I can also just grab it, set it on the railroad or set it on a shelf and kind of bounce around. And I'd say probably of all tools I've got, creature comforts are one of my high on the list. And a Bluetooth speaker, and what better to listen to the Crossing Gate podcast than have good audio.
That's some good sucking up there, I guess.
Yeah. Well done. Well done.
Well done. Well done. Here.
Yeah, you just won a Klein wire strip.
Yeah, tell them what they've won, Mike.
You no longer have to use your thumbnail. You can use the Klein wire strip.
Use the Klein. Available at Gruesome Casket. Okay. So, and then, so Mike, tell us a couple things you like, tools you use.
I think I have a kind of a collection of small nippers, get tight spots to cut windows and that kind of stuff into plastic. Like I said, my jeweler files, my hand seems to go into that box more often than any of the others because it takes any burrs off of parts and flattens them, sometimes tapers a corner. So when you're gluing things together, they just fit better. Like Larry mentioned, he's got probably a dental office full of dental tools, but I think I got three or four. So if I'm stripping or trying to get decals off, those are a handy tool.
Very handy. And Joe, Mr. Building Resin Kits, what's something you would recommend to have on hand for people who are going to start building these beautiful resin kits that are available?
Well, if you're going to build the one-piece body box cars, you really need to have the Kaufman corner clamp. And if you look, Kaufman Engineering, I think is the name of the company, and they have three or four different ones, but it's a little brass and aluminum machined piece with nice little screws, and it has a foam jaw that you put the corner of the end and the corner of the side in, and you line them all up and you tighten them down, and then you put a drop of glue in there and it holds it perfectly at 90 degrees. And that's the worst thing to do is to get that box built to 90 degrees. Once you do that, everything else is gravy. So that's the thing that I would recommend if you're going to get into resin kits. Figure out a way to get your corner square, and that Kaufman clamp does it real easily.
That sounds like a neat tool to have for that type of thing. Ken, any tools you have on your cluttered workbench that you can dig out, or what's your favorite one?
Yeah, I've got a set of the flush cut nippers. PBL used to do them, and I think some other people do. I find those are really nice for getting good clean cuts. You know, that's probably one of those key things. And then I actually build some larger wooden buildings, being an S scale, and I found that I could find some nice corner clamps out of the woodworkers out of woodworking shops that work pretty nice. But I like your idea, Joe, of the Kaufman. I've always looked at those and never pulled the trigger on them, and I think that's a smart thing to do, because you're right, when you're building structures or resin kits, getting the structure square is the thing to do.
So. Yeah, I think Joe's right about that, because that'd be misery not having it right. One of the tools I like, and I've told Larry about this, and he's got them, are these little saws. They're made by CMK Kits. Totally replace a Zona saw. They fit in your hand, and they look like the old double-edged sided razor blade, but they have saw teeth on them.
Oh, yeah.
And they come in super fine, and you can just cut, you know, the sprues and the parts and all the styrene and everything exactly just like a lumberjack. But if you go to, like, you know, www.cmkkits.com, you'll see these. I think they're from somewhere in Eastern Europe. They make them, but really neat tool. And then for storage, one of the things I found is you can buy these. I'll probably get grief for this. I call them empty lipstick tubes or balm tubes. You can get like 60 of them on the auction site. We all know what that is, for about $10. And what I do with those is I put all my miniature drill bits in them. And I can take a marker on the outside and write number 78.035. Then all the 78s go in that one. And you can take the top off. And then when you want the drill, you just screw it up and it pumps up so you can grab it and then lower it back down. And so I've got one of those little lipstick balm tubes for every size of drill from 80 up to 65. So I don't have to try and keep them in a little Walter's packet or in something that you'll never see. It's kind of a neat little go-to tool. I think I found that on the Model Railroad Hobbyist thread. I like, William, you hit on the Bluetooth speaker, because I like having the, I like having the radio on too, playing smooth jazz or something. What are the things do you guys like that make it enjoyable and ergonomic at your workbench? Do you have a comfy chair? Do you have better lighting? Anything like that? We'll go to you, Dave.
Well, that's where the old kitchen comes into play, because of the good natural light. And I usually don't do much of this stuff at night, because it's easier for me to doze off if I try doing it at night.
Plus, you're close to the refrigerator. Is that going to help too, or no? Or?
Well, yeah, that could work.
The cupboard.
Yeah, it's a comfortable space to work, because I've got windows on all three sides of me. You know, I rather like working upstairs in the kitchen. But I'm an anomaly, because I never listen to anything. You know, if the TV's on, that's one thing, but I never listen to music. I enjoy working in the cone of silence. You know, I don't even turn the radio on in the car a lot of times. You know, I like it quiet. And so that must be some kind of disability that I have that I haven't figured out a name for yet. But just as a quick question I wanted to ask, Joe, do you ever use like Legos? You know, to get the square corners, you know, those Lego blocks, you know, steal them from one of your kids. And
I have 100 million of them from when I was a kid, Dave. So I have not. I've kicked it around. The other thing I've taken to doing is taking a piece of the ABS plastic angle, and I put that on the bottom of the side of the end on the inside where the coupler box would be, you know, above the floor. And then I use the coupler box screw to screw the floor onto the end. But I haven't really braced anything, and I haven't. The only cars that have fallen apart were the one that my wife launched off of my layout by accident one time.
By accident.
Well, that's what she claims. I have to go with what she says.
She must be obeyed. We know
exactly.
Go ahead, Dave.
Anyway, I like Legos. So, you know, just because it's. I mean, I've used them a lot on structures, and you know, it's easy enough. You can get some of the bigger ones and snap them together at a right angle. You know, to make a corner shape or a form to work stuff around. I mean, I've never tried building a resin car box car kit, so maybe that it wouldn't be practical for
that.
No,
the guys do that all the time.
Yeah.
They use those a lot.
Greg Dahl's not here, but he got me hooked on, they're called, correct me if I'm wrong, 1-2-3 blocks.
Yeah.
And these machinist metal that are perfectly square. Sure. And he builds these downtown deco kits, which is a lot of filing on plaster, and it's tough. They don't come square, but he uses those 1-2-3 blocks, as well as you use Legos and stuff. So I like Legos too.
Do you use those in conjunction with, or any of you use those in conjunction with magnets?
I haven't tried that yet, but I bought my 1-2-3 blocks at Home Depot because they had them in stock. So
you just have the holes in them or the solid one?
They have holes in them. And I think, aren't they? They're even tapped, it seems to me.
Yeah.
I think what department were they in?
Oh, I ordered them on. I ordered them online, and they did one of those things where they stuffed them in one of those little lockers, you know, and just said, go to locker number 123 and, you know, stick your hand into the dark space and you pull them out, and there they were. So,
so. It's a gallon of paint, wrong locker.
Exactly.
Mike, what are your go-to things here?
My workbench is an old desk. I don't know how I came about it. I have a 18-inch by 18-inch, 5/8-inch thick piece of glass that I got. That sits right on top of my desk, and it is great because I know it's a flat surface, and whatever I build up off of that is going to be flat. Now, my biggest problem is high eye-hand coordination. So I have all kinds of cheater pieces of steel I've gotten from job sites and things I use for weights. You know, there isn't any place to go buy this stuff. It's just, oh, look at this shiny thing. I pick it up on the job site, take it home and repurpose it for weights or giving me corners or something that's plumb. So again, those are my go-to things that just work. I'm sure the 1-2-3 blocks probably are exactly what I got that I found. That's the kind of thing that encourages me.
Well, what do you do at the workbench? What makes it comfortable? You got a favorite chair? Do you have good lighting? Do you listen to a heavy metal rock? What do you got there?
I do listen to some pretty
Nirvana and 70s.
Now that's too Kennedy's. Modern. Oh, that's too modern. Modern crap. You know,
Molly
that's
cool. Not rock. Oh, Led Zeppelin. Where are we gotta find you?
Are the Rolling Stones too modern for you, Mike?
That's borderline.
Beethoven.
Yeah.
Give Clark Five. Come on,
Clark Five. There you go.
And
good Larry.
People always ask me, what do you want for Christmas? And it's just like, don't buy me a paperweight that flashes like a crossing gate. I did ask for a color correct LED light. That's good on my old eyes. I can, there you go, Larry. I think that's one of the things too, is like William said, a good sound system speaker, good light. A comfy chair would be nice. Maybe I'll ask Santa to bring me a comfy chair. I got an old dining room chair. But like William said, you know, you're sitting down, working, standing up. A lot of times I'm working on the layout, so I'm not sitting down.
So, Larry, how do you stay comfy when you're not crawling under a layout and soldering wires above your head? What do you do?
I am at my bench. I actually have a stool. It's affectionately known as the creaky chair. And because it makes all kinds of noise if I move around in it. And I've had it 25 years.
You should name a company after that. That would be...
I would think that might be smart.
Creaky chair models.
Yeah. Well, what a concept. At any rate, that stool is perfectly formed to my ever-increasing butt. So that's the comfortable thing. But the biggest thing I have at my PC, and I carry with me to my customer site, my PC, I have a 40-inch monitor and a PC attached to it.
Wow.
Now, it's an Amazon monitor. It's mounted on the wall, Fire TV with monitor, and it's attached to a desktop PC. If you need quick research, boom, I pick up the keyboard, type it in, you know, and find what I need, and I've got a nice big display there. When I'm not doing that, I can pop on a YouTube, or I have a pretty extensive train video collection, and I'll put that on, or like Tom says, some music on Spotify or whatever, a good set of speakers on it. But at my customer site, I have what's called a Lenovo Yoga, and it's a little laptop, but it folds back on itself and it's a touchscreen. So it becomes a tablet, and it's 14 inches. That's the biggest research thing for me. Is having the knowledge quickly in my hand. If I need to order something from eBay, I'm not delayed. I'm doing it right then.
Well, it's kind of like an iPad then, or
But it's actually a laptop that folds back over on top of itself.
Wow.
They call it yoga because it's like you're doing yoga where you know you have to bend in 94 directions that none of us can.
Tom, I'm a little hurt that these guys aren't mentioning that they're listening to a certain podcast when they're working on their.
Actually, that's been mentioned a couple times, and that's a given.
Are you listening during this podcast, Joe?
Yeah. Are you even paying attention now?
Are you questioning my train of thought?
He has headphones on. There's no telling what he's listening.
He's listening to the Alabama game. So. So we'll go to Ken. What do you do to have ambiance or comfort at your workbench that makes it enjoyable?
I have Bluetooth earphones, and I like to listen to podcasts. That's my favorite. The nice part about that is, because I do it on my phone, if I get on somewhere, it's a guy yakking too much, I can put it on 1.5 speed or 2 speed and get through it, and then go back and stop and listen if I need to. Otherwise, you know, it's just nice and relaxing. It's like working the old days where you could go down to the hobby shop and hang out and chit chat with guys. It's like working around like that, and I appreciate that. Sometimes I'll actually try to do some educational things, but I'm past that point anymore. I don't need to learn anything anymore. I know it all.
You know it all. I like that. Yeah. I like that.
Yeah. But he does and he asks me about.
There we go. Yeah.
I could. Yeah. You know, and actually, I like I told you guys earlier, I've got a whole page full of notes, and I've actually been bad boy spending money, and I suppose I should wait 2 weeks before I order all these new tools, but nah.
Yeah, before Christmas. All right, anybody want to bring up some things that we might have missed? What do you want to have on your list for improving someone's bench time experience?
I think one thing is I've been looking at garage sales for a T-cart, because if I'm working on something, my biggest problem is I don't have the patience to wait for glue to dry or paint to dry. But if I pick it up and set it off to the side someplace where I can't see it, I won't touch it until the paint's dry or the glue's dry. And I think that's to have a secondary surface is important.
So what was that you were looking for?
A T-cart. It's a rolling cart. There used to be big things in the 50s and 60s that, you know, you'd put everything on a cart and then roll it from room to room.
Oh, okay.
And
those old movies where they'd wheel in all the stuff.
Yeah, exactly. And
I actually know what that is. My folks used to have one.
I thought we were getting sophisticated with our modeling. Yes. In the middle of
you
modeling.
Gotta, you got to have your pinky out.
Okay, so silver. It's a rolling cart.
It would be better if it had gone there.
Yeah. And I'm sure that they're sold at Northern Hydraulics or Menards.
And they're probably not called tea carts because they might look at you a little perplexed.
Yes, yes.
You know,
yes,
we'll take up a collection and get you a nice tea cart.
You know, 20 years ago, I saw one at a garage sale for $5. And so when I go to Menards and they want $69.95, I go, no, I'm not spending that kind of money.
On a tea cart.
Yeah, on a tea cart.
Does it come like with the silver thing with the lid, you know, room service will wheel it in and ta-da.
Yeah, you know, exactly.
The project you're working on that day.
The Marx Brothers movie or something, you know.
Yeah. But speaking of lighting, though, and in the case of two workspaces that you were kind of commenting on that, Mike, Dave, you said you've got two and then a third one, which is upstairs. Lighting, I think, is important. And then you got to ask yourself, what kind of lighting? Now, just for listeners that are trying to figure out what's a good light to work above your workbench, I'm going to open it up to everybody just to throw out what type of light you might use. But before I do, I use they're under cabinet lights that normally be used in the kitchen. They're a strip light. They're about, I think they come in 36 or 48 inches in length, and it's just mounted underneath. They're really bright LEDs. They've got a little switch on them that you can turn it brighter or dimmer, but I leave it at full brightness. And then temperature. When you walk in there and you look at it and they've got the wall of lights to choose from, if you think about your old incandescent lights, those are 2,700 Kelvin. And then you look at it, and Dave, you're working at your kitchen table. That's technically daylight, and it's called 5,000 Kelvin. But when you put a 5,000 Kelvin in your basement, that daylight's going to look blue. So what I've found is 3,000 Kelvin has been a nice compromise between a daylight light and that incandescent bulb that you might be used to. Do you guys use any sort of a fluorescent? Do you use incandescent LEDs? What do you guys use for your lighting in your workbench or your work areas?
So, William, I've gone to all 5,000 Kelvins, and I recall probably 20, 25 years ago working with a couple guys down in the basement, and an older gentleman that was working with us kept asking for more light, and I couldn't understand why. I do now. And so I've gone to all... On my workbench, it's all 5,000 Kelvin. I just like that extra brightness. It's good for my eyes. You enjoy your 3,000 Kelvin while you can.
Oh, I will.
Yeah, I use the same thing. I've got one of those little strip LED lights, and I for a while I had a color balanced or whatever fluorescent sewing light that my mom had used, and she gave it to me, and I tucked it up under there. And of course, the bulb went. Wheels up, and I tried to find one, and they were like $45 for a bulb. Well, if I can buy a fixture for $10, I'm going to do that because I'm a cheap son of a gun. And over the layout, it's just kind of whatever fluorescent bulbs I have. I've got those real tiny little T8 ones that are 4 feet long. But as they go bad, then I'm putting in LEDs.
Well, and LEDs are measured in lumens, too. And obviously, the higher lumen value, the better. I've got 10,000 lumen with mine, and you can almost see me from space. So if you guys are wondering what's going on in the North Metro, it's probably me.
You, huh? We can see the underbody of your car. So Joe's commenting on your brake system already.
Exactly. So I put track lighting around my entire layout. And I put a 4 foot track over the top of the bench. Now, my garage has got 12 foot ceilings. I have three fixtures that point down at various angles, one from the center and two from each end. And they have Ott lights in them, which are as color balanced as you can get. Yeah, it cost me a bleeding fortune for the bulbs, but it's just a choice I made. Sure. Some of the new 5000K LEDs, though, like the PAR 20s floods, are just as good as the odds. So when these die, that I will put those in. But yeah, I concur. Lighting is everything on the bench. And especially when you're looking for that number zero screw that kind of slid across the green cutting mat.
Yeah. And it's your last one.
And the other thing I was going to bring up earlier that I did is I got this trick off of, I think it was MR, probably 20 years ago. My wife gave me one of her aprons, her kitchen aprons, a white one, and I put some Velcro on the end of it and stuck it under the bench. You stick that over your head, stick that thing out there, and if something falls down, 95% of the time, it'll fall into that apron, and you can find it pretty easy.
Yeah, my wife made me one of those, and if I used it, it worked great, but I'd always stand up and forget about it and choke myself.
Oh, yeah, I've done that.
Most of my exercise from crawling around on the floor.
Crawling around, yeah, and there's all your calorie burning. But I like that apron idea and stuff like that. So, yeah, I like the lights. There's such a difference of layout lighting and track lighting. Does any of you use those optic visors? And if so, do you also have lights on them or different magnifications?
All the cool people have those, Tom.
Well, I have like three pair, but...
I've got the Optivisor. My wife bought it for me for Christmas one year because we were having resin car building nights over here. And I was like, what the hell? I don't need this. And then 6 months later, I couldn't see the end of my nose. So, and then I had to get the little light thing that Micromark sells that you know, had the little battery pack on the side. And boy, that makes a big difference when I remember to change the batteries.
So most people have people over to play bridge or poker, and you make them build resin cars, so.
Well, their own resin cars.
Oh, okay. I thought you had the cheap labor going.
If he's playing bridge or poker, he's wearing his Optivisor, which is smart.
I
can read his cards.
Yeah, David, do you use an Optivisor or loops or anything?
I've got some of these flip-up deals that go on my glasses that I know I get them from a place called Deb Specs on the internet, but I think you can buy them pretty much any place. And now they're like a 3x magnification, so you can just flip them up, you know, and put them back down. And I have an Optivisor, but it just isn't all that comfortable. It seems like I'm always banging it into something. So, although I was thinking about getting one with lights and then using that as a Halloween costume, you know, that might be kind of a fun thing to do.
Plus, you're the one with the really good head of hair, so you don't want to get it messed up. You know.
Yeah, that's right. Well, yeah, that's part of it too. I mean,
yeah. It makes it a lot easier to drive on the highway with those.
Yeah. So you're going to go as Joe Binnish for Halloween. Is that what you're saying?
Oh, there's a thought. And I can get a nice white apron, you know, and this could lead to who knows what.
Yeah, like resin cars and walk around.
But those little flip-up specs are pretty handy, I think.
I have a
Does everybody wear glasses?
Everybody wears glasses. This is you have to wear glasses to be in this hobby.
Pretty much.
Well, I got LASIK. We'll see how long it lasts.
We outed him with the LASIK already.
I had cataract surgery, so this right lens is just glass, you know? The left one, they haven't had to do yet, so.
Oh, you can wear a monocle, then.
I could. I look like Colonel Clink.
Or Dr. Evil.
Dr. Evil, there we go.
I totally would.
I'd have to have a band around my head, so it really, you know.
Yeah. So what else, what do you think, you know, would keep you from the bench? What do you think? Listeners, you know, it's like, I don't want to go down there. Is it the clutter? Is it the lack of tools? Is it just they're staring at too many kits? Because we talked about this, guys come downstairs. You know, Luke talked about his big layout. You look at it and you're like, and back upstairs to watch a show. So what can you avoid at your bench so you want to go down there?
I think just having the layout in a pleasant room, well lit and well ventilated, is probably the two biggest things that gets anybody down to their layout. After finishing my layout, I wished I would have spent a little bit more time finishing the room, but I was too excited to have a room and start building the layout. You know, it's the lack of patience, but making sure the layout room is a pleasant space before you even start building a layout is number one.
I think if you don't want to be down there, why would your operators or guests? So what do you guys do to keep the layout from becoming the workbench?
Operating sessions.
Operating sessions, okay.
Yeah. Invite people over.
Yeah.
That'll clean it up pretty quick.
Is that the fear of the visitor and the operator? Is that clean off your workbench at all?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I had some Yahoo come over today and I had to go down and make sure that the laundry room was fairly clean.
You need a better guard dog. So.
Well, I just had a group in town from California just last week, and four or five layouts I know got a lot of progress on them and a lot of cleanup done, mine especially. And so in between sessions, the track above my workbench becomes a holding area for kits to be worked on. And then, I have to restage and I have a group of guys coming this Friday. I have to make sure I get everything set. So that's what I was doing before we started this. But, you know, it kind of becomes the Tetris pile where you move stuff around so that you can get your layout cleaned off enough.
Do you guys feel, Lance Meinheim wrote a blog and a post about having a instant on layout. And that would kind of help avoid that. If you can go down to your layout and power it up and then go run a train, you're less likely to turn it into the workbench. You're more likely to run something. So, because if you worked at the workbench, you know, for an hour, and like, well, I just want to go run a train now. You guys believe in that or anything that way?
Oh, absolutely. Yep. My layout, I can run continuous trains. And I've worked on my layout and just turned on a train and let it run around the layout. And it's kind of nice. You get to be a rail fan and get work done.
Yeah,
I agree. I think, which of you guys, do you have your workbench in your layout room? Mine's technically down the hall in the corner. But if you've got your workbench as accessible, in your case, Joe, you said you just set it up there. Is it better to have Dave at his kitchen table where he's away from the railroad to keep it a little bit cleaner? How do you guys that have it in the room keep your workbench as clean with the railroad right nearby?
A bigger tub.
Yep.
Bigger and more of them.
Yeah.
In my case, I like Mike can run continuous operation on my trains. So if I put a decoder in, I'll just set it on the track and let it run for an hour. Half hour in one direction, half hour in the other direction. That breaks the engine in And I'll just reach over with my smartphone and bump the speed up and down to change the speeds like you're supposed to. And it tells me if there's something wrong, you know, with that engine. And if not, and I do the same with I'm a fan of a lot of the old AHM boxcars that had those snap-in trucks that, you know, flopped around when you took it off the track. Well, I'll put good trucks on those and, you know, weather them up if they fit what I need. Every car that goes from the bench, I literally turn the stool around and can set it down on the main line. Yeah. It's within 2 feet of my stool. I can just spin around and set that car on, and that car runs a minimum of 10 cycles each direction, facing each direction, to see if I have a problem with it. In the end, that helps the operating sessions. Anybody comes over to operate, I'm not concerned that they're going to have a car that's got a problem. I've already sorted that out. And I have a special reserve blue tub just for those cars that didn't quite make it.
Official blue tub, the trash can. So Ken, you've kind of posted us a question about these optic visors. Have you guys seen the ones with lights on them? Or you can buy Micromark?
I bought some at a flea market, believe it or not.
Is it annoying or is it okay? Or
it's about useless, honestly. They don't really, if your bench is well lit, they don't add any.
I find them very useful because I can, you know, if I'm looking at something and playing with a Dakota or trying to get it, you know, these horrible brass steam locomotives to run well, you can peer inside there and that light goes right where you're looking and you can, oh yeah, look, I'm rubbing the drive shaft on the weight. That's not going to work.
So we need to buy Joe a miner's helmet for Christmas.
Yes.
That's
exactly.
Some cool miner's
thing. And a big flexible lighter to light.
yeah. For the pinpointing.
Sell them at the Loch Ness.
Yeah. Okay. So we'll end it. I'm going to go around the horn and really throw you guys under the bus. Think about this. I'm going to ask you what's on your workbench now. And you don't have to fess up about all 30 projects, but if you got up to three, you can tell us what's going on. And I'm looking at Joe, so we'll start with you. What's on the bench?
Three Central New Jersey baby faces, resin shells that need to be masked and sprayed the blue. I have an A4 Skyhawk, and I have four cars that need to be built and sent out to New Jersey for the folks that hosted us. So they'll be Central Minnesota cars.
Oh, so you're building them from your layout to trade to them?
Just to give to them. Yeah.
Just to give to them. Okay. Yeah. Okay. That's got to go. David, what's on your workbench?
Well, the kitchen table workbench has last two freight cars that I'm scratch building. I'm in the process of putting the decals on those things down in the basement and, you know, work area, the main work area. I have a brass GP30 that I put a decoder in, a keep alive in it, and I bought some fiber optic stuff and all these little tiny little surface mount LEDs. So I'm trying to get that thing on the railroad. Just received one of those new Rapido SW1200s that I picked up the other day, so I have to program that.
What name did you get? Is that a Burlington?
Let me think. It was black and gray. Burlington. Yeah. That's it. Yeah. And then I just fixed a few cars yesterday, as a matter of fact. A coupler swap or two and putting some trucks back on where those stupid little press-in plastic things popped out. So I changed that over. So it's mainly the brass GP30, the cars I want to finish for these merit awards, and then whatever else I said, the Rapido thing. So those are the priority ones, and they take, you know, once that's done, then I don't know what I'll do. That's supposed to be funny.
Yeah. You don't have any more projects, I'm sure.
Well, there's a few other locomotives that I work on from time to time, if the mood strikes.
Shiny objects.
And exactly. And there's some scenery things I want to touch up, but that's not on the workbench, fortunately.
So, very good. Mike, what do you got working on? The 70-tonners, can I guess that? Or what besides the 70-tonners, we should ask?
Like I said before, the decal ferry came over today with some decals. So I can finish up a refrigerator, mechanical refrigerator car. I ran out of decals. So now I can finish that up. Like Joe mentioned, we had some guests from California. So I spent an awful lot of time getting my railroad to work. So now I can go back and I'm repowering GE 70 tonners, Bachmann GE 70 tonners with Northwest Short Line Drive. I started the project before the Californians were coming. I figured out what all the problems are. Now I hope I can solve them and I can just put these things together fairly quickly and have them on the layout.
Now, the decal ferry, did he make anything that you could do your first S-scale car for Jordan Walker Produce?
He did. And I guess we'll have to get someone's address so that Decal Ferry can cut it up and send it off to him so he can get his mechanical, Northern Pacific mechanical car decal, correct?
Oh, I think instead of mailing, we should just visit. That's much better.
Yep.
And so I think you should talk about this too, Mike, real quick, because we talked about the visitors from California and you model the produce. And who did you have stop by that knows anything about produce and operate your layout? Who did?
Well, the,
you can name drop. It's all right.
There was a gentleman named Tony Thompson that stopped by so I could educate him on nuances of moving refrigerator cars around the layout.
And you explained PFE to him? He didn't know anything about that? Or
I explained to him that there were different types of cars, and they ship different types of produce. And so, I have to thank Mr. Benish for inviting him to the Twin Cities, and more specifically, inviting him to my house, because I've been following his blog and read his book. So it was great to have Mr. Refrigerator Car come to the layout and we kibitzed about it.
That was mostly Rich that did that, but I helped a little bit. But that was really a lot of fun.
Yeah, that's cool, Mike. I think that's the Pope coming to visit.
really.
And they came and did all, it was nice and they came and visited all these layouts, but I wonder why you kept them away from all the iron ore layouts. That's a
just dirt.
I wasn't strong enough to bend their arm.
Yeah, you don't want to go see Grog hauling red dirt on.
No. Not when you can haul lettuce.
Yes, haul fancy
asparagus.
Cars.
Asparagus, yeah.
Larry, what's on your workbench? Maybe your customers, too. What are you working on?
Actually, I just took three projects off yesterday, believe it or not. I had like one of those moments of zen where it was like everything finished. Tomorrow I'm starting on a Frisco FP7 in the Dulux Gold Stripe scheme. It's partially painted, but it wasn't done very well. So I get to redo that. I just put a video up on YouTube about a CMRI node that controls four servos. I'm still refining it. It works perfectly as I did the video, but obviously the more you look at things, the better you can make them. That's on the bench for this weekend. I'll be back visiting that again. Then there's the 47 boxcar kits that are in a pile.
The pile.
And it's in the corner. See, I actually have a bench with a vertical riser in the back. It's 6 foot wide, and I'm happy to get my 1.5 square feet of workspace.
Out of that, yeah. So are the 47 cars, is that like trucks, couplers, and weight and things? Normal
stuff? They're kits.
Oh, you're okay.
I have, around the country, I have probably 10 or 12 Schnossage Brothers boxcars. And I've got some people in my life that I'm going to be making boxcars for. So they're on deck kits and they have to get sprayed and decaled and all that. That's why they're in that very neat pile in the corner of the bench.
Ken, what's on your workbench besides clutter?
Yeah, clutter. I'm redoing the drive and the control system on that Jeep that blew up a Sontrax Decoder. I've got a couple of these refrigerator cars, mechanical reefer cars, to get done. And then this summer, my big dehumidifier blew out, and I bought one, but it was too small. So my track work got really gummy over the summer, and so I'm trying to clean a lot of track work, and I just need to get back to where I can run trains. I always thought it was really neat when I could go down anytime and run trains when family would come over, and it's just not it's not playing well now. So just got to go back and get that all fixed up.
All right. That's a good thing. And William, what have you got working on your workbench or your dad's? What's going on?
I've got two or three projects kind of going all at the same time. And as I mentioned, my workbench is a standing workbench. So I didn't mention the floor. If you're on cement and you don't want to stand on cement, I have, it's a black foam commercial mat. You can buy it at Home Depot. It's 36 by 48, $20. It's the best $20 I've spent because I can set a stool on it and it won't mark up and get nicked up or dinged because it's a commercial doormat. It's fantastic. So while I'm on cement, I'm standing there working on stuff. I have two air slides. They're two tangent air slides, a Great Northern and a Chicago Northwestern. I've stumbled into the Tamiya accent washes. Joe mentioned the accent liner. I've been using these washes, and they come in a black, a dark brown, a lighter brown, and as well as gray and a few other colors, but they're phenomenal. It feels like I'm cheating while weathering, and if you don't like weathering air slides, this has been a godsend. It's been fantastic to wash a car with it, and if you make a mistake, you take a little mineral spirits, and you can back it off. And if you want to add a little more, you can kind of go back and forth and find a happy medium. Those two air slides are working their way through the process, as well as AK Interactive. They have colored pencils that these colored pencils in conjunction with that Tamiya wash it's insane. So if you're looking for Christmas presents, these are things that are just, they're mind blowing. They're not expensive. I think a little thing of wash is, you know, $5-6. The little Tamiya pencils, now that is a little more costly for one pencil, but they're like a couple bucks. But they really allow you to weather, and I mean, that's what I'm diving into right now, and really kind of give yourself a nice rust or a worn look without turning it into a rust bucket or getting too carried away with it. And then the last thing that I'm working on is a Delano depot for my dad's railroad. We're in the research phase. If you don't have research material on hand, the interweb obviously has a lot of content, but the Great Northern Historical Society has been huge. Some fellow modelers, Joel Binnish included, have been providing information, Rich Ramirez, on nailing in the details and refining your modeling. And it's going to be reference books. If they're books that you have on hand, there's a ton of them out there. But that's one that I'm dialing into right now. It's a 24 by 100 foot depot. And I like the prototype. That's what I'm starting to dial into. I did one about 20 years ago. It doesn't look at all like the prototype, at least the one that we want to see for 1970. So that's what I'm working on currently. Will I get it done within the next 10 years? I hope so.
Yeah. No time limits on these projects, guys. No time limits.
No, that's what I've got on my workbench. But then out of all of us here, Tom, you haven't commented. What do you got on your workbench?
On mine right now, I took apart one of these Rapido cabooses. I've got six of them. Larry's helping me install a decoder because I wanted to put one big red light on each end that blinks. They have the little Canadian red and green lights, and I wanted to kind of Americanize it. I'm putting in a decoder, and Larry's been helping me put on, I don't know what the term is, Larry, track pickups, wheel pickups?
Yeah, track power pickups.
Power pickups with a brass tubing on an Intermountain wheel set, insulated Intermountain wheel sets, power to the decoder, programming it so the lights blink and work with the engine. And we're each finding out something new about this, that you almost need a motor load?
Yeah, a lot of the old motor type decoders that you can use for lights need a load on the motor leads so that it responds to the program track.
Yeah.
So we're experimenting. That's the word I was looking for. Experimenting with how much load and what size resistor, since it will only be intermittently. That's also on the bench.
Yeah. So yeah, it's one of these things that when I get that done and completed, and I'll write down the whole process, the next one I hope to make a video or an article on. So I'll have one completed, and then I've got six of these. So the next one I can go step by step on what you should do, and I'm learning what you shouldn't do. It was just interesting just trying to take them apart. Yeah, I know how that goes. And I'll throw this out here, one more last fun question. What's everybody's favorite beverage when they go to the bench? Does it matter what time of day, or is it always scotch for you, Joe? What is it?
Bourbon, not scotch.
No, bourbon, that's right. Do you guys have some favorite? I'm always drinking iced tea.
Coffee.
coffee?
Yeah, I'm on sparkling water generally.
I like hot tea downstairs. It's a little cool down there, and the hot tea is great. If I'm having a frustrating night, it becomes Captain Morgan.
There we go.
You love Captain.
There you go.
Captain in your tea?
So you can tell people that have funds to spend other than model railroading. I'm stuck with Ensign Morgan.
That's not aged as much.
It's not aged as much. Ensign, yes.
Oh, that's going out. That
can we get another sound bite there? Dave, you're another Army guy. You're drinking a Lieutenant Colonel.
Oh, Morgan. There you go. Sure. No, tonight it was hot chocolate, even though the cup says cappuccino.
Oh.
And then I used to have a Keurig machine in the basement, so I drink coffee down there or sparkling water because I like to go to Costco and get their 24 pack of Kirkland Magic sparkling water, because I kind of like that stuff. But so yeah, sparkling water, coffee, or the occasional hot chocolate.
Why is it magic water? Can you use that for detailing?
No, there's just something about it that's like invigorating. Regular water is obviously essential, but that carbonated stuff, I don't know. It's like a lift. So especially if it's the right temperature. And what was William holding up there? Is that what?
It's sparkling water, yeah.
There you go.
I think it's filtered through dragon's nostrils.
Wait, that might be magic.
Although that Captain Morgan sounds kind of good right now. Ensign, Captain, Sergeant, as long as there's a Morgan in there.
Morgan.
You know. Some Morgan. Guy named Morgan.
Yeah. Morgan Fairchild, yeah. Something
Morgan
like that.
Morgan Freeman.
Morgan Freeman. Okay, yeah. One of those. Yeah. All right, guys. Well, thank you for your input, your ideas, the laughs as always. And I think we all look forward to bench time. And I like William's idea of we inspire each other or shame each other into finishing projects. We'll interrupt, and you guys can all say good night.
Good night.
Good night.
Good night, guys.
Good night.
You've been listening to The Crossing Gate, the official podcast of the Twin Cities Division. You can find us on Facebook in our group, the Twin Cities Division of the NMRA. You can email us at tcdnmra@gmail.com. Thank you for listening, and don't forget to subscribe for future podcasts.